On this special edition of the Video Culture Podcast, we'll talk about and reminisce about the last blockbuster.
Did you rewind it?
I don't know.
In a time where everyone has a podcast, in a place where everyone has an opinion, two heroes, Matthew and Ryan, against all odds, are here to save your movie viewing experience from total disaster. Your trip through the video aisles of yesteryear begins now. There will be chills. There will be thrills. And there's a good chance that Ryan will have a coffee spill. They'll discuss the quality, cultural significance, and more detail, frankly, than you bargained for. Here's your host, Ryan Acree and Matthew Essery.
And welcome to this special edition of the Video Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Acree.
And I'm Matthew Essery.
And this week, we decided to kind of take a break from movies for a second and really go back to kind of what this podcast is all about and watch a documentary. And we watched a documentary called The Last Blockbuster, which is available on Netflix, oddly enough. It just released this year in 2021. And it is about the last freestanding blockbuster video in Bend, Oregon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, as that chain has died out over the years, eventually there were you know, a dozen, then four or five, and now there's simply one in this random little, you know, town in Oregon.
And it really, you know, tries to tell the story of the video store itself. Right, it tries to, at least in the beginning part of the last blockbuster, and I don't want to do like a whole like review about it, and a whole like synopsis and whatever. But it just, you know, we wanted to give a springboard to talk about, you know, those things and talk about, you know, the video store and stuff like that, because that's what we talk about on Video Culture. And you know, Video Culture, the name actually came from and originated from a, you know, family oriented or, you know, standalone video store itself that was in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and right next to, you know, Middle Tennessee State University, where I went to college. And I have no affiliation with that store whatsoever or the owners, but I do, you know, they were that store that you would go to, like, if you wanted to find, you know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, that's where you would go.
Yeah, so the film is very much, it is sort of about the creation of the video store phenomenon, and it sort of frames that around the story of the blockbuster, the rise and fall of the blockbuster chain. You're right, we don't really want to make this into like a review of the film. Because, I mean, the film's readily available for everyone to watch. It's under 90 minutes. It's a really easy watch. So, and of course, I think we're both going to recommend it just based on the fact that it's so inherent to what our show's about, you know?
Yeah, and I just find this idea of the video store fascinating, because it is a story like weaved into America's story, right? And it was, it is, like you said, this rise and fall. Like, we have a complete industry in our lifetime, in our generation even, that came up and created a whole new industry, came to the rise, was able to multi-million dollar industry.
Really, billion dollar.
Billion dollar industry. I mean, yeah. Blockbuster bought Paramount, of all things, and then fall dead in the water. Doesn't exist anymore. Poof.
Yeah, you know? I don't know. I don't know if there's anything else that's equivalent of, like I said, of something that was completely created in our lifetimes, became incredibly ubiquitous. I mean, literally was everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's down to almost being non-existent and almost being extinct.
The only other the only other thing I can think of was like fax machines, floppy disks, you know, things like that. But those are all based around technology, right?
Yeah.
They're all like, and Blockbuster was able to keep up with the times. It went from VHS, you know, and even beta at the beginning and then moved into DVD and then, you know.
Yeah,
I remember kind of Blu-ray, kind of like near the end.
It's true. And, it's just talking about how just widespread the concept of the video store was. I've told this on my Twitter account before, and I think I may have mentioned it on this podcast, but do you know how many video stores my little hometown had?
How many?
Seven.
In Tupelo, yeah. Mississippi.
In Tupelo, Mississippi, which is a bigger city for that part of the state for that rural area.
Mm-hmm.
But still, seven.
Wow.
And that there was one Blockbuster, there was one Hollywood Video, and the other five were mom and pop chains.
Right.
And so think about that. That's how common video stores were. That the little place I grew up in had that many.
Wow.
And now there's not one within probably 100 miles of me.
Wow.
And yeah. I live in Nashville.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably a Redbox nearby.
Yeah, that doesn't count.
Well, I mean, really, but Redbox did replace this kind of idea of this physical media, this rentable physical media that you know, take and, you know, there's late fees if you don't get it back on time. And yeah, they're next to places like Walgreens and, you know, grocery stores and things like that. But it's the same concept, right? The same idea. And, well, you know, they're not ever. But see, Redbox is not everywhere, though. They're only like in bigger cities. They're not in smaller cities. Now, there are smaller cities. Like, there's a video rental place. And I was going to mention this like later in the video, but I know Bowling Green had a Family Video. No, you know, and that just closed recently. Gatlinburg, Tennessee. Also, I remember they have a, you know, video rental place because you're up in the mountains and, you know, a lot of people don't have internet, like in more rural parts of the world. And you still, you know, rent because you don't want to pay. And even if you did have internet, somebody, you know, doesn't want to pay $14 or $15 a month to have Netflix. I mean, they want to watch, you know, one or two movies a month, then they pay the $2 or $3, you know, rental fee.
Yeah, it's interesting how that people often think that's where the video stores are still alive is in those rural areas, and I think there is a lot to that where the internet's not good or where it's mostly an older community. Maybe they're not comfortable with the idea of streaming, and it's just sort of surprising to me that we went from something that was literally everywhere,
right,
to being so very sparse.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the documentary talks a lot about this. I feel like we do need to talk about a little bit about what the film goes into. It goes into, yeah, like I said, the history of the video store, the history of Blockbuster.
Well, yeah. Yeah. It kind of like tells two – it's kind of trying to tell two stories at the same time, or really almost three, and I'll kind of break it down. The first, they're trying to tell you the story of Blockbuster, right? They're trying to tell you how it came about, how they, you know, came to be, came to grow, came to fall apart, right? And all, you know, some of the dealings and what really broke Blockbuster apart. The second story they're trying to tell is the actual last Blockbuster that's there, the last few, because there were a few in, you know, Alaska before the last one in Bend stood. And then it also tells you, like, and it tells you why the Bend store is so well loved, which we'll get into. And then the other sort of story, like I said, is this big overarching story that's kind of behind it all, which is the America story and the love for the video rental store and how it's kind of like weaved in. And I thought it was actually funny because I don't know about you, but I remember when I was growing up, Blockbuster was kind of like McDonald's, right? They were kind of like the evil enemy. They were the corporate entity. You didn't want to go to Blockbuster. If you had a Blockbuster card, you wanted to hide it, right? You're like, no, I go to the family place down the street. Like, they always have the movies. I support my local people, you know? Mm-hmm. And or like, I want to find some older movies, and they don't have it over there at the big Blockbuster place, right? They were kind of like the corporate enemy. And then now here we're celebrating like the last standing, you know, Blockbuster store, which, you know, we're like in love with. And, you know, because I don't know about you, but I kind of felt like in the movie that it's almost like it's morphing back into that family owned, like I listened to the community that the lady that owns that runs it, the general manager, Sandy, you know, she gets movies for people that she hears about from them, and it becomes part of the community and not this like mm-hmm. corporate entity.
Yeah, I think that was the most fascinating thing in the film. I think that was almost an unintentional story. I kind of wish they had focused more on that idea that it was this monolith that is now basically the very thing that they drove out of existence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and right. and they touched on Blockbuster as the big corporate enemy of the mom and pop a little bit. They kind of briefly interviewed Troma Films' Lloyd Kaufman. Right. But they barely touched on that. Like, you can tell that they didn't want to paint Blockbuster in a very negative light.
Go ahead.
But what I was going to say, I think a lot of the nostalgia that's come out of, you know, people being like, oh, I miss Blockbuster, oh, yada, 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 it's because video stores in general are gone.
Mm-hmm.
And Blockbuster is just kind of like a shorthand way of saying, man, I miss video rental shops, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of like how you don't say face tissue, you say Kleenex, you know?
It's true. I mean, but video store just became a thing because there were so many. I mean, there were, you know, Hollywood Video, Family Video, and all the other, like, mom and pops, you know what I mean? So, for mm-hmm. every Blockbuster, there was, you know, I mean, I don't know about you, because like I said, even in my town where, let's just use Murfreesboro as an example. You had a Blockbuster, you had a Hollywood, and then you also had Video Culture, and you also had, you know, three or four other places around town. I think even like Hastings that we had in, you know, Murfreesboro, they did video rental for like a little while, but.
Hastings, I mean, this is totally local talk, but Hastings was, in Murfreesboro, was renting videos up until 3 years ago, because I would go there to buy movies, and I was always sad that I didn't live close enough to be able to qualify to rent movies from there. But I would drive up there for like movie shopping,
right?
And I would always kind of just browse their video rental section because I always thought it was still neat that, you know, here in the, you know, 21st century, there was a video store not too far away.
Wow.
But everything else, it's gone. But
I rented a house probably about 5 miles from that Hastings.
Yeah. It was a very cool shop.
Yeah, it was. It was. And my roommate that was really into movies, he was at Hastings all the time. Spent a lot of money there, buying all of his media. But yeah, you're right. It doesn't really it kind of talks back. It kind of like, is this sad downfall of, you know, Blockbuster? Not that they did all these evil things. They did touch on some of the evil things about how they, you know, made deals and how expensive videotapes and things were at the beginning, because Hollywood, you know, they price their videos like really high because you're basically, they don't know who you're going to, you know, show it to. So the same way that we have new release movies that are coming out on streaming and they're $20, you know, like, why do I have to pay $20 to rent this movie? It's because you can show it to like four or five of your friends or whatever. And, you know, that's why, because it's a, you know, it's a first run movie. And and it talks about how Hollywood would just make deals with Blockbuster, and they would show they would get enough copies to where Blockbuster didn't have to invest in buying all of those and being sunk with the inventory after nobody wanted to rent Mission Impossible 2 after they've already seen it once, and, you know, left with like 100 copies, you know what I mean? So.
Yeah.
Or like Forrest Gump. I mean, I remember when Forrest Gump came out, like nobody could get it. A friend of mine, so I used to be, two of my best friends worked at a video store in the late 90s when we were in college. Mm-hmm. So when I lived in Knoxville, Tennessee, there was a mom and pop video store, and that's where he worked. That's where I got to watch a lot of the movies. That's where, I mean, I kind of like worked there without pay, you know, a couple times, you know, just hanging out, at the video store, you know, and they, you know, we got to watch movies and we got to do all the stuff. But like when Forrest Gump came out, yeah, like they only got, you know, like 20 copies, and then like Blockbuster had like 100.
Yeah, and that goes back to them being like the McDonald's of video stores. Like if you wanted like the big mainstream thing, you'd go to Blockbuster. But if you wanted to see like a classic or an obscure horror movie or a foreign film, or I'm just gonna say it, if you wanted to rent pornography,
yeah, they had a back room. Admit, I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, and because Blockbuster did not care much about old movies. They did not care much about foreign films. They didn't really care about documentaries. And they were against anything that was NC-17 or pornography. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to get an NC-17 film, not to equate those with pornography, don't think I'm doing that. But if you wanted to see an NC-17 film, you just couldn't get it at Blockbuster. They had, the highest they would go is R.
Right.
And that was another thing that they did that always bothered me as someone who considers himself a cinephile and a lover of movies. They kind of supported soft censorship.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean,
yeah, because there's a lot of director's cuts movies that are technically unrated that, you know, they wouldn't carry at Blockbuster because it doesn't carry a rating.
A good example of that is Tony Scott's True Romance. Very famously, the director's cut of that is unrated. It's pretty much the only copy of it that you can get nowadays. But if you ever rented it from Blockbuster, you got a R-rated version of it because that's the only one they sold, and it had less violence and less profanity in it.
Mm. Yeah,
just little things like that always kind of bug me about Blockbuster. But
yeah, again, I mean, there was a lot to, you know, growing up. There was a lot to not like. I think let's just go over the cast and the, you know, there's kind of like a cast in these things, right? Like, yeah. Sandy Harding is the general manager, right? But you got Kevin Smith. I mean, Kevin Smith, he is like the voice of the independent movie maker, right? Like, when you make a classic like Clerks, like, you know, you get to say anything about, you know, movies at that point. Ione Skye, right? Mm-hmm. Like, she's in Say Anything. But Brian Posehn?
Brian Posehn.
Yeah. Sorry, Brian. But yeah, he's the guy, like, you know him from The Big Bang Theory, where he played Burt Kibler. He's from Sarah Silverman, New Girl, Reno 911, Just Shoot Me. He's a guy with the red hair, kind of talk like this. Anyway.
Yeah. Phenomenal. He's a phenomenal stand-up comedian.
Yes, phenomenal stand-up comedian. But just like, you know, kind of deadpan, real low, gravelly voice. Yeah. But no, he said, you know, I can't go in looking like this. And he's wearing like a flannel shirt and like a Metallica t-shirt underneath and like black pants. And you're like, you know, it's like, yeah, you had to wear khakis and you had to wear like polos. And
yeah, you had to wear the Blockbuster polo. And I had friends that worked at Blockbuster, and they literally would wear that shirt every shift. And he made a joke about it being kind of funky after a while. And it was, because you didn't have time to wash it. And be able to have it ready to wear for the next shift.
Yeah.
Because they only gave you one, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I worked at an electronics retail store out of college, like, you know, and we were kind of the same way. It was like kind of like khakis, and we had to wear like the, you know, the polo. Now, we had different colors. We had like white and red and black, and so I kind of got to mix it up. But yeah, it's a pain, you know, because especially if you want to do anything afterwards, it's like I got to go home and change, or like you got to bring clothes with you or something like that. And then, yeah, you're always having to wash them and to keep them. And then you're always buying them. Like, somebody winds up there leaving, and so you're like, I'll buy your shirt. Like, let me get some extra shirts. And by the time, you know, if you're there like me and, you know, we're there for 3 or 4 years or whatever, you wind up with about 5 shirts, you know. And because when you first start, they give you 2, right?
Yeah. Well, but the whole point was that again, Blockbuster was a very corporate kind of thing, and but you're right, as it's died out, as we've all become more nostalgic about it, and you develop a lot more goodwill about something when it's gone. You know, the old saying goes, absence makes the heart grow fonder. Right. So when everyone's kind of reminiscing about missing Blockbuster, they're not really missing Blockbuster itself. They're missing going to some place with a friend and flipping through movies and talking about movies and renting a tape and taking it home. And because we've talked about this before. It used to be that going out and getting a movie was an event.
Right.
You had to invest time into it. Streaming, and I've talked about this before in my writing and on my Twitter, and I think on this show, streaming has made movies feel kind of disposable. Like, you know, as much as I love movies, as much as I consider myself a diehard cinemaphile, I will start seeing them on Netflix sometimes and be like, this is boring, and just shut it off within 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And go browse for another hour and a half, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think music is a lot the same, you know?
Yeah. Spotify with music, yeah. But before, if I rented a movie from Blockbuster, I had it for 2 days. You know, I went and got it. I paid a decent amount of money for it. I put the one's effort to go get it. I'm at least going to watch because I paid money for it. I'm not going to waste that rental. I paid for it.
Right.
You know, I brought it home.
Yeah.
I made the effort to get it into my house. I'm not going to watch 10 seconds and be like, this is dull. You know?
Yeah. I say the same thing about music and not just like, like Spotify and there's some others, Qobuz and Tidal, and Apple Music and, you know, Amazon Prime Music, all these things. It's like, you can listen to all these different stuff from all different genres, all different time frames. You know, whatever. Like, I have Spotify at my fingertips, and I sit there and go, what am I listening to now? I don't know. It's because, you know, you're overwhelmed with, like, choice, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't, like, you have those certain albums that you go through. Like, you had, you know, everybody had the book of CDs that we go through or, like, whatever. But that's why I think that, like, people are going back to albums for the same reason and buying vinyl, because you're buying a physical thing. You're invested in this thing, and then you go, you have to be very deliberate to listen to vinyl, because it's not like you can listen to it and walk around or listen to it at work and get lost in doing something else or listen to it while you're sitting at your computer and messing around with Photoshop. It's, you have to sit there, put it on your, you know, hi-fi system and listen to the record. And that's the same way with movies. Like, you've got to get the movie, whether whatever form it is, VHS, beta, Laserdisc, DVD, Blu-ray, you have to physically put it in and watch it. And yeah, you're right. You're invested in it. Like, you've actually done something. You've got this thing and, like, I'm going to watch it. There's very few movies that I have rented where I've put it in and I'm like, after 10 or 15 minutes, I'm like, yeah, I can't watch the rest of this.
Yeah.
I think one of them was Hurley Burley.
Hurley Burley. That's kind of a hard watch if you don't know what you're going to be seeing. Not to digress too much, but to go back to the idea of investing in the activity of going to the video store. Another thing that streaming has taken from us, and this is not to be, you know, like angry old man waves at clouds or whatever, but
like the one guy, right, in the scene, the Die Hard video guy,
exactly, but. Well, one thing the video stores have kind of lost is the idea that it used to matter. Collecting stuff used to matter. Like, I've got a video collection that I cultivated over, let's be honest, more than 20 years of my life. And now, easily 40% of it, you can just get on the internet, no problem, with Netflix or Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And these are things that I had to hunt down, seek out, really you have to, like, look around for to find, and now it's just everywhere. So and that's good. It makes film more democratic and more available to people who are coming up.
Right.
That's good, but in a way, making it more democratic is good, but the flip side of that is it loses some of its value because you're not putting in the effort to find it. You know, you're not invested because you didn't go out of your way to hunt it down.
Right.
Like, I remember when I would buy a movie that I've been looking for a while, I would watch it 4 and 5 times because I worked so hard to get it. Or I didn't have enough money to buy another movie yet. Like, that video may cost me $40. I didn't have a lot of money when I was, you know, 17. Mm-hmm. So I had to make another $40 to be able to buy another movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'd watched the one movie I had bought already over and over again until I made more money to buy another one. So you got as much as you could out of that one tape.
Yeah. Yeah, and I used
to... So you spent more time with it.
Yeah, and I used to ask my friend who collected movies like a lot like you do, and he would have, like, he had, you know, Laserdisc, he had VHS, he had DVD, he had Blu-ray, and he would have the same movie on multiple media. So he didn't just own, like, you know, there would, like, he would have, I think James, like, he was a big James Bond fan, right? So
yeah,
he would have, like, a James Bond VHS box set, right, of, like, all these movies. Then he would have individual VHS. Then he would have a Laserdisc of it. Then he would have, like, the, I don't know, I have it on DVD. Then, like, a special edition DVD. Mm-hmm. Then he would have it on Blu-ray. So, we're like, I counted one time this one movie he had on seven different media. Now, some of them were duplicate media. Some of them were, like, a DVD and a special edition DVD or, like, whatever.
Like this DVD has commentary.
Right, exactly. And that's what he said. He said, well, this one is the director's cut. This one has commentary. This one, you know, is just part of the collection of the box set. This one, you know.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, and this one was the first DVD that came out, but it's not an anamorphic. So you got to get this one, which has an anamorphic, which has the commentary, but this one has, you know, the special features and all the bonus stuff on it. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, I definitely went through that a little bit in my collecting days. I had, because of space and just sanity, mm-hmm. I had to try to say, I'm going to try to only have one version of a movie. I'm just going to try to make it the best version I can possibly get at any particular time.
Mm-hmm.
So I will sell off or trade or give away my old copies of things,
mm-hmm.
Just to save on space. But my point was, some of the joy of that, some of the nostalgia, is people miss the idea of, again, the investment in the activity.
Yeah. Well, I was
going and doing something.
Well, one of the things that it mentioned is this kind of ritual that we came up with, right? Where, you know, like we have Netflix and chill, right? Well, that's, you know, but before that, you had to go with your special someone and try to figure out what movie you're going to watch, you know, what one or two movies you're going to take home. And I say special someone, but sometimes it would be like a friend. You know, like me and my buddy used to go in, like, what movies are we going to watch? Like, you know, it was a thing. And then you could probably spend, you know, and I told this to my wife, like, as soon as we watched the thing, I started thinking about that. I started thinking about, well, you can still rent movies, right? Like, you can still, just like you said, we have it on streaming. We can get all this stuff. We can rent them. If there's some weird, obscure movie, maybe I can go to justwatch.com and figure out where I can watch it or where I can rent it. And, but, you know, you can spend 20 or 30 minutes inside a video rental store like that, like the last Blockbuster in Bend, Oregon, and not think anything about it and walk away with two movies and go,
yeah,
that was time well spent. I look at the movies, we have fun. It was like, it was almost like a mini event, right? Yeah, like if you didn't know. But yeah. But if the same thing is like if we didn't, when we got Netflix, we would spend 30 minutes on Netflix to try to find a movie, and it was infuriating. Because by the 30 minutes, you're like, I don't even want to watch anything now.
Yeah, because it's not really social. You're not moving. You're kind of sitting there sedentary. You're not out. The video store, much like the record shop, You're moving around. It's still a weirdly physical. You don't even think about how physical it would be, but you're bending down to pick up a tape. You're looking at the back. Hey, have you seen this one? Do you like this actor? And it's a more active thing than scrolling through your Netflix queue like numbly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you're seeing everything. You're seeing like, you know, the staff picks, and you're seeing like all the different genres are like packed together and. And seeing all these like weird movies and stuff like that, like it's just kind of a thing. It's like browsing, you know, the library, but instead of a library, it's like all, you know, these books. It's like all these movies, and you know, you get the same feeling that like how people felt when they first went to a library. Can you imagine somebody who read books and like went to a library for the first time, this first concept of this, you know, book. And it's the same sort of thing with a video store. Mm-hmm. But now it's movies.
You hit on something really interesting there that we haven't talked about yet. You mentioned the idea of staff picks, which is, you know, we use that phrase mm-hmm. on our website for our articles. That's kind of our homage to that.
Yeah.
And that's something that again, streaming has really killed. And you're going to appreciate this, but the idea of curation, the idea that there's an arbitrator is like, hey, if you like this, you might like this, or here, I think these things are worth your time. Netflix has the algorithm, which if you ever really looked at if you really paid attention to the algorithm, it's nonsense. Well, I've used Netflix for 10 years. They barely understand what the things I like to watch.
Right. Well, it does get, you know, better and better all the time. It gets, instead of just the algorithm, it becomes AI, right? And it becomes more intelligent, and it kind of can learn patterns. But it's still, like you said, it's still not, you know, it's still not fantastic. Like some of the things that we would come up with, you know, a computer, at least now, probably wouldn't come up with. And I think the example in the store that the guy said, when he would, you know, somebody would recommend something, then they would go, eh, you know, and then if they, you know, they would win people over because they're like, oh, wow, he's right. This was kind of meh. So what else you got? You know what I mean? So they would, you know, because that's what happened to my buddy all the time. They would bring up a movie and they would say, you know, what do you think of this movie? And he was like, meh. And they would rent it anyway. And he'd be like, I don't care. And they would come back, though, and they would ask for his advice and they would listen to him after that.
Yeah, because they start to realize, oh, yeah, this guy watches a lot of movies. Maybe he has an idea of what's good and what's bad because he's seen a lot.
Well, and that's what Quentin Tarantino did when he worked at a video store.
Yeah.
I mean, he was just like, oh, let me show you this. I mean, can you imagine going into a store and there's Quentin Tarantino like telling you what to watch? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can kind of imagine, but I always think of it like our conversations, like the thing. Mm-hmm. Think about the things that I've kind of talked you into watching.
Oh yeah,
because of this show. That's an idea of curation as well. It's like you would not have watched The Warriors by yourself.
No, and these are movies that I now love. I love The Conversation. I love The Warriors. I mean, Knight Riders is growing on me, but. I mean, it's those type of things that, like, you discover, and you're just like, holy cow, does anybody know about these other movies? Because this is fantastic, man.
Yeah, and that's what the video store used to kind of be, when you could establish relationships with the guys who worked at the video store who really liked working at video stores. Because every store had at least one guy who actually was a movie guy or a girl who was the movie person. And you could say, hey, what do you think of this director? What do you think of this film? And they'd be like, well, they're okay, but if you're into that, you should really try this. Right. Like, oh, you think Nightmare on Elm Street's good? Well, you should really watch Hellraiser instead. Right. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
that's
so,
true. Yeah.
And Netflix has kind of lost all that. It's lost that kind of human sort of guide.
Right. Yeah, like if somebody came up to me and said, oh, man, I love all this – you know, reggae kind of feel stuff from The Police, from like Regatta de Blanc. And I would be like, all right, go listen to some Toots and the Maytals. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, and they're like, who is that? And they'd, you know, then they'd be like, oh my God.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, Spotify might get that, you know,
maybe,
but I mean, maybe. Yeah. But it's like, you know, again, it's like someone came up to me and said, hey,
but they would more match like, stuff like the Talking Heads or...
Exactly.
You know, whatever. All this new wave
stuff. The obvious stuff. Yeah.
Exactly.
Like, if someone came up to me and said, hey, man, I really love Goodfellas. What would you recommend if I really liked Goodfellas? I'd be like, well, have you seen King of New York? And, you know, they'd be like, well, no. Or they'd be like, I have seen King of New York. I'm like, oh, you've seen King of New York? Well, have you seen Miss 45 or Bad Lieutenant?
Right.
And...
Yeah.
So you can kind of feed off of that and
hopefully
find a deep cut that will become a new favorite for them.
Or I really like Pulp Fiction, but none of like Quentin Tarantino's movies like make any sense. It's like, well, have you seen True Romance? It's like, okay, like what's that movie? Nobody knows about that movie or whatever.
Or have you seen like 2 Days in the Valley, which is another kind of Tarantino kind of light movie that's not quite as narratively convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
And see, but again, that's the thing that algorithms, AI, or whatever, will never quite capture, at least probably not in our lifetimes.
No. No, they get better at it. And I have a lot of friends that do like, you know, Spotify's sort of algorithm or whatever. It gives them, at least it gives them something new to listen to that's close to what they're listening. But I don't know if they'll still make, you know, the true discoveries of whatever, of some of the things. I mean, but the thing about it is how else, you know, like we talk about, like, we should really like grant, you know, Oscars or Academy Awards, like, you know, 10 or 15 or 20 years, like after the fact. And that's just another way to showcase that was like from, you know, from these video stores that had all that old stuff. And I don't think the movie, one of the other things I thought about watching the documentary, doesn't really talks about the last standing one and the kind of the downfall of Blockbuster or whatever, and it not being Netflix, whatever. But it never really talked about, I mean, it kind of did, but why Bend, Oregon is such a big, you know, sort of a part of that. Like, what makes them successful than some of the other Blockbusters? Not that they just carried on, or not that she's had a bunch of, you know, people that have worked at her store, right? That are kind of like her children or whatever. But she's also done something different in that store. In the fact, like I said, like I mentioned before, that she made Sandy made that store part of the community. You know what I mean? Like knitting the beanies for the, you know, like all that stuff. Yeah. It's just she would listen to whatever movie that they want and she would go get it. I mean, I love the scene where she goes to Target and she's like buying movies at Target for the store. That's one of my favorite parts of the whole thing.
Yeah, because that goes back to it being to kind of regressing back into a mom and pop that you want to root for. Like, you know, like that's what made me nostalgic and made me want to go there was not that it was Blockbuster, but that it really was like this warm kind of family run shop.
Right.
And
well, and it wasn't corporate Blockbuster. I don't think that they would have allowed staff picks at a regular corporate Blockbuster.
I know they didn't for a long time. I guess now that you don't care because there's only the one.
right.
But,
yeah.
But, so you're right. But that was one of my first things, too, when she was talking about how she actually goes and hunts down movies. And for people, if she can't get them through the distributor, she'll go out and just buy them.
Right.
Because she wants her customers to have that.
And what corporate store would have done that, too? I mean, they didn't care about the long ones. You know what I mean? They cared about the new Blockbuster that was going to, you know, whatever movie was going to come out that was going to get them a lot of money.
Yeah, the key to success kind of things is having a small enough community and being community oriented. And you just don't see that a lot nowadays. Like, I mean, definitely not in an online retailer space. You don't really see that kind of, you know, customer first sort of mentality. I will give a shout out to one online retailer who tries that. Mm-hmm. There's a DVD shop called Diabolique DVD.
Okay.
I'll be sure to link to them on the Twitter when the show comes out. But they sell genre films, horror films, you know, action, exploitation movies. But it's run by like three or four people in like the northeastern part of the United States. And they sell weird movies basically, and for lack of a better word, but and foreign films and things like that, editions of popular films. And but if you're looking for something and they don't have it, you can say, "Hey, can you get me this, you know, German Blu-ray of Knight Riders?" And they're like, "Okay, well," then they'll actually write you back and say, "Well, who makes it?" And you give them the name of the company. They will go out and find it, and if they can get it, they will get it for you.
Wow.
But that is super rare.
Wow,
But that kind of like customer oriented business model is why the last Blockbuster. That's really the heart of the documentary. That's really the heart of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. I wish they had focused more on that because I mean the talking heads with like the celebrities reminiscing about Blockbuster.
Yeah.
That's fun and cute, but that's not what was most interesting to me about the documentary.
Yeah, I mean Paul Scheer. He's been in several different like TV shows, like Fresh Off the Boat, Veep, The League, NTSFSD SUV. But anyway, he used to work at a Blockbuster, so I really liked what he had to say, and Ron Funches was really funny. Sam Levine, like he I guess was part of like Blockbuster as well.
Mm-hmm.
He was in Freaks and Geeks and Inglorious Bastards, but. Go ahead.
Yeah, and they had Doug Benson, who is Doug loves movies, and
he's got
that real famous movie podcast. Even though we don't mention other movie podcasts on the show, we do love Doug Benson.
Well, Paul Scheer does. How Did This Get Made? Right, like
that's true. Yeah. I'm just kidding. We have no beefs with any other movie podcasts.
Oh, I mean. So, I actually thought about calling, see if we could get Sandy on the podcast or whatever. But I think that she really, I don't really want to bother her because I think that she's really busy with her time.
Yeah, she seems very busy.
And, she's got other things to do than to talk to us. And I think that all of your questions, like if you had any questions or most of my questions were answered just by watching the documentary. So I don't really have, really much to say or ask her about her other than how she's doing and how she plans on retiring. I mean, that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To me, her story and her family story is the most interesting part of the film. Like, I want to go there just to, thank her for keeping that kind of idea alive. And it seems like she runs a really nice store. But really, it's like one thing we talked about. It's really at the heart of all this nostalgia and all this wistfulness about video stores is that, again, that community experience. Like you talked about going to the video store with your special someone or your friends. So many of my early favorite memories of me and my buddies and me and my first girlfriends were walking around video stores. And, when I was watching the documentary, it all came flooding back to me. Idea of just you kind of learn about each other this way. We've talked about this before on the show. You sort of learn about each other in an abstract way by you like this movie. I like this movie. I like this actor. You like this actor.
Yeah.
And it was such a ritual. And that's what we're missing. Yeah. We're missing that social ritual.
Yeah. My friend used to have video nights. My friend in college at MTSU. In Murfreesboro would have video nights on Thursdays, and he would get them exclusively from Video Culture because he was friends with them, and he would go by their recommendations and they're the only place that you can get and see like all of the kung fu movies that you ever wanted to see. I mean that's the thing is like you go to another store like Hollywood Video, for example, and you go to the action films. I mean, they might have a few kung fu movies, but I mean, when you go to Video Culture, when you went there, they had a whole section that was just nothing but kung fu movies.
Yeah.
That's the difference between those places. I mean, when you want to find that genre or subgenre that you want to get into, even their horror was almost like split into subgenres. Like, here's your slasher films, here's your zombie films, here's your sci-fi like weirdo films. I mean, and then here's all of your that's how it was broken. And then here's all your like Stephen King type horror movie. You know what I mean? Yeah. It was all kind of broken down in that way.
Yeah, and that's something that Blockbuster really kind of killed, and that's why this kind of nostalgia for it is. It's kind of a conflicted thing. Like, we can sort of miss Blockbuster, but we're not really missing Blockbuster as much as we are again the idea of video stores in general.
Yeah, because that's what the last Blockbuster is now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And it just kind of shows the kind of the circular nature of life in a weird way.
All right. Well, we'll get to a few notes before we wrap it all up, okay?
Oh, so, of course, yeah.
I did do a few notes just so we can have it. Even though if you watch the watch the documentary, some of the stuff is in there. Blockbuster was founded on October 19th in 1985 in Dallas, Texas. It was founded by David Cook, who supplied software services to oil and gas industries throughout Texas. And then he got the idea of like the video store. So at their first store and 8,000 VHS tapes and 2,000 Betamax tapes. So in 1987, Waste Management co-founder Wayne, what was his name? Wayne Huizenga? I can't say his last name. Anyway, they got involved. They agreed to buy out Blockbuster and all their 19 stores by then. So, I mean, from 85 to 87, they grew to 19 stores.
Yeah, that's some crazy growth.
Yeah. In 1989, and I didn't know this. This was not in the film. 1989, Nintendo attempted to halt Blockbuster from renting video games by filing multiple lawsuits and lobbying Congress to ban the practice. Of course, Nintendo lost.
Yeah, it's very much a repeat of how Hollywood tried to stop them from renting movies in the first place.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and they in the music industry tried to stop reselling of CDs and reselling of you know, used records and tapes. Right?
Yeah,
and
used CDs. You can stop the flow, man. You can't put Pandora back in the box. You know?
Let's see. Where was I at? Defunct in September of 23rd, 2010. Blockbuster went defunct in September 23rd, 2010. Although Dish Network continued the Blockbuster name until November 6th, 2013. And the last corporate-owned store closed in January 12th, 2014. So in 1990, Blockbuster acquired the Ritz video chain and expanded to the UK. I should have put that before then, but sorry, I didn't put my notes in order. I didn't know this either. In 2000, Blockbuster Entertainment partnered with Enron in an attempt to create a video-on-demand service. However, Enron terminated the agreement in March 2001 over fears that Blockbuster would not be able to provide sufficient films for the service.
It's funny how Blockbuster came so close to being incredibly relevant. Like, it's like the documentary touched on this. Like, if they made a few different choices, our world would be much different now.
Yeah, well, like, I mean, you know, that was in 2000 when they had that part when they were given that partnership with Enron, which Enron, like, you know, wound up like folding because of all the investor whatever. But the other thing is 2000, that's when they were given the offer to buy Netflix for $50 million and turned it down.
Yeah.
Because Netflix then was just like a mail, you know, like you would rent by mail service, right? Mm-hmm. Like it's a DVD by mail.
Yeah, I was actually a user of it back then. I thought it was pretty neat because they had so many foreign films. That's why I was a big Netflix guy in the early days because of that. And it was just convenient. It goes back to convenience. And,
yeah,
you know, and because again, in retrospect, we didn't realize that all this stuff was going to kill the video store back then.
No, I mean, me and my friend had a Netflix account when I moved away from the domicile, right? I had our own apartment. Me and my buddy did because we were like in college and working at night, and we'd come home late, and you know, we didn't have time to go to the video store. So you could just like put in what you want on the computer. We were computer savvy guys. We had internet. We just put in what we want, and then it would just arrive by mail, and then we would, you know, watch it and send it back. So yeah, it just goes back to convenience. You know, you wouldn't have to go to the video store and wander around for 30 minutes. We can just, you know, you put it in your queue and you just wait for it.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw Netflix streaming. I had a buddy who was a professional artist, and I went over to his house one day and went to his studio, and he was playing Braveheart on his computer. I'm like, oh, you're playing a DVD of Braveheart? He's like, no, I'm streaming that off Netflix's website. And this was like 2008, and I was like, you're doing what?
Yeah.
And that was kind of the beginning of the end, because then it started getting more and more common after that.
Yeah, no, I remember around that same time going to Best Buy, me and my wife, and I'm like, we need a Blu-ray player. I need Blu-ray. Like, you know, we had a you know, flat screen, you know, then we're like, I need Blu-ray. And so we go there and they're like, oh, do you want one with streaming with like Netflix and blah, yada, yada? And they had like two Sony models, and like one had Wi-Fi built in, but one you had to buy like a USB, like Wi-Fi adapter. So I got the one with like Wi-Fi built in. And yeah, we got like Netflix. Watch like streaming stuff. Crazy.
And it just, It seems so magical and weird when you first start using it, and now it's the most common thing in the world, and it's and we kind of live in a hell of like where everything is all divided up again. You have to have 8,000 streaming services to get a decent selection of content.
Yeah, now you just almost all the TVs that come out now have like the stuff built into the TV. Like you get like Roku TV or Android TV or like whatever, you know.
Yeah,
and it's but they all have different.
Well, they all have different licensing agreements, though, so everything has different stuff. So it's almost back to where you have to buy all these different things to just kind of have a decent selection. It's that's the downside of it too. So
yeah,
it's a weird world we live in.
Yeah, like you love The Office, but now all the stuff of The Office is off of Netflix, and it's now on its own stuff. It's on Peacock, and I kind of saw that happening when I first saw, you know, CBS had its own app. Like CBS wasn't going to stream. Like, me and my wife used to love watching Big Bang Theory, but we can not always watch it when it came on, like, Monday nights or Thursday. I can't remember the original day that it was on. And we'd have to watch it, like, later. And I would have to hook up my computer to watch it up on the computer because they didn't allow it to be streaming on Hulu or anything else. Like, Hulu came out and was like, oh, we're going to partner with all these Fox and NBC and yada, yada, yada. Now NBC is, like, pulling away from Hulu and pulling away and then, like, putting all their stuff on their own app.
Yeah, like, CBS got their own got the Paramount thing. NBC's got the Peacock Network, which is the worst name for a service.
Right.
But anyway, we're getting off track here.
Yeah.
There is one thing I wanted to mention about the last blockbuster, a little bit of trivia.
Wait, I'm still not done. I still have some more facts, but go ahead.
Oh, well, no. Well, I was going to say, if you want to support the store, they have a website. I don't know if this is in your notes.
I was going to put that at the end. So
Okay. No, good.
So, all right. So we got off track because we got talking about streaming. So, let's see. Okay. So, Hollywood Video. Oh, last thing I'll say. At its peak in 2004, Blockbuster had more than 9,000 stores worldwide. 9,000. They were the largest. The second largest was Movie Gallery / Hollywood Video. Okay. Hollywood Video was founded in 1988 and was the largest competitive Blockbuster until it was purchased by Movie Gallery in 2005. So Hollywood Video ceased operations in May of 2010 as Movie Gallery declared Chapter 7 bankruptcy. The last store closed on July 30th, 2010. And October 2011, HollywoodVideo.com site had been relaunched as a blog. The site remains active. However, the last entry was made on October of 2014.
Weird.
Yeah. Family Video was founded in 1978 and operated 800 stores at its peak. I don't think I've ever rented from a Family Video.
There have never been any close to me. Like the closest one was like in Bowling Green.
Yeah. I remember there was some in my town in Knoxville. And like I said, I remember seeing one in Bowling Green, but yeah, they closed the last 250 in 2021, and now they're an online company only.
Yeah, we posted about that on our Twitter back when it happened. That they put up a fight for a long time. So respect to them, you know.
Because of the coronavirus and Corona. I mean, but really, that was the only thing that was that stopped them. If it wasn't for like the coronavirus, they're still going with 250 stores or 200 whatever stores up until just now because of the coronavirus. Because everybody was staying home.
Sad thing about one of the many sad things about the pandemic is it really destroyed a lot of those last few remaining video shops. Like there were a lot of mom and pop like boutique video stores and places that were still around. Like there was, you know, Vulcan Video in Austin, Texas, which had two or three locations, and those shut down because of, you know, the pandemic. I remember when I went to Austin a couple of years ago on vacation, I made my girlfriend at the time go to one of these Vulcan Videos just so I could walk around and be in a video store again.
Wow.
I think they thought I was goony because I literally was taking photos in the video store. Like, oh, just taking photos like the aisles because I hadn't been in one in so long.
Well, like that one guy, he's walking around with his phone, like taking video of the
Blockbuster. It was very much like that. Yeah. And I think they understood. But But it just made me, like, it made me emotional to be back in one. Mm-hmm. And I literally was there for just 2 hours just looking through. I didn't buy anything. They didn't have anything I wanted to own as far as things that would sell me. And I couldn't rent anything. Mm-hmm. So I just literally sat there for 2 hours just flipping through movies and talking mm-hmm. about the movies they had.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was nice. And that's, again, it's kind of gone now.
Yeah. Well, hopefully... Maybe some of those guys that worked at Vulcan Video are listening, so,
you know. Well, I think that those kind of shops are going to come back. It's like what they mentioned in the documentary. I think it's going to become like record stores again. I think it's only a matter of time before you're going to get like, and I say this in the most affectionate way possible, but you're going to get hipster like video stores. Mm. You're going to get like nostalgia-based video shops. Popping up like you get like hipster record shops.
Yeah. Well, we have
it. It's only a matter of time.
We have an inordinate amount of hipster record shops around our town in Nashville because we're just the music city. Like people come here yeah. expecting to find record shops. But, you know, hey, we even have a record plant here. They press records.
That's true.
United yeah. Record Pressing. Anyway, so that's like one of the last few remaining record pressing plants in the United States. All right. Last bit. The actual, documentary does have a Rotten Tomato critics score that I will mention. Critics, 70%, 66% audience for the documentary. And
I find the audience score a little surprising.
Mm-hmm.
I don't. I enjoyed it. I mean, the movie is a little like rambly, even as short as it is.
Yeah,
but it's still enjoyable.
Yeah. Somebody. Okay. So I'll read two little quick snippets. Robin Pierce from Starburst Magazine says it tells a story that is once a warm look back at time when renting a video for the weekend was practically a rite of passage for a generation. And on the other hand, a depressing account of sheer corporate greed and lousy decision-making.
That's accurate.
Ashley Laura from The Spool says, a flashier documentary may have struck with the fluffy or stuffy interviews from executives, but the last blockbuster is a movie made by fans as a love letter to their fellow video store fans.
I mean, basically, if you like our show and you like what we talk about and you're into the stuff that we ramble on about, you're going to enjoy this because it's the same vibe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you like our show, if you like the stuff we talk about, you're gonna like The Last Blockbuster. I mean, it's not a perfect documentary,
yeah.
but it's gonna scratch that itch. You know?
And I love how they talked about it, but not mentioning like any movies like whatsoever.
Yeah,
like pretty exactly. much almost no actual movies like talked about. Just the video store and the video store experiences. So, like you mentioned before, you can buy Blockbuster themed clothing, beanies, socks, hats, keychains, games, pint glasses. Shot glasses, sunglasses, magnets, face masks, a tote bag, postcards, movie poster, all Blockbuster themed now, a Blockbuster membership card, yes, and you can also buy the Last Blockbuster special edition on Blu-ray from bendblockbuster.com.
And that is the actual website for the video store. Like they put their weekly new releases on up on the website, so you know what new movies are going to have.
They have their location information, you know, all that stuff. So if you want to visit and find yourself in Bend, Oregon, want to go there, by all means, they have a map right there to find it. But yeah, you can buy all this stuff from it. There is that Twitter account that they talked about. I can't remember the name of it, but it's nobody them. They actually do have an Instagram account, however.
That's good to know.
Yeah, they.
And go ahead. And I was going to say, I'd like to encourage people to if you like the idea of video stores sticking around, by all means, try to buy a little something from them.
Mm-hmm.
Just show support to these places that are trying to survive.
Right.
They're trying to keep the vibes that we hold dear going. Mm-hmm. Like I'll be honest with you, I'm probably going to buy one of those knit hats because I mean. Sandy makes those hats herself.
Yes.
And, you know, we could always use a nice winter hat.
Yeah,
you
know? I know. I'm like, I was just thinking, I need a new, you know, beanie myself, because mine's getting kind of it's too small and it's uncomfortable. And that one just looked like nice and comfy and big and yeah. I mean, in there, yeah, like they're made handmade. And I mean, who couldn't use like a Blockbuster magnet to go on their refrigerator? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that's one of my favorite. That's one of my favorite things to pick up traveling, is because it's like they always have shot glasses or always have something. I'm like, you always buy a little magnet because that doesn't take up a lot of room, and you can always have it there to look at to remind yourself of that, you know, trip or whatever.
Yeah, and not to do too much of a sales pitch on what they have, but I'm thinking about getting a hat and the keychain that looks like the Blockbuster membership card.
Oh, yeah.
Because I could use a new keychain. I honestly could.
Yeah, that's, like, super cool. I mean, and it's not, like, really expensive. The keychain is $7.
Yeah.
The beanie is $25, but, I mean...
It's handmade.
It is handmade, and it still has the official Blockbuster video, logo on it as well.
Yeah. So I think that, I mean, again, it just, you know, if you like the idea of these people just try, this family owned business just trying to survive, try to throw some money their way, try to show support.
Yeah, I wish they had some other way to support them other than just, you know, the Blockbuster theme stuff. And maybe the biggest way, like you said, is to buy the beanies, because that's probably what they're getting the most profit on. But yeah, I mean, they also have the Blockbuster face masks. So, you know, in this time where we still, even after vaccination, you still got to wear masks, you know, hey, we probably all could use a fresh mask. And I'm sorry, I'm doing a sale. They're not giving us any money for this. They're not, no. You know, we are, this is a nonprofit thing. We're trying to help them out as much as possible.
Yeah.
Well, I almost wish I lived in Bend, because it's so great. And Sandy just seems like, the nicest, like, generous person who, you know, she really cares about her family and really cares about the people that come into that store.
Well, the thing, I think it's probably a good note to end on, but what you're missing there, again, is the idea of having a community and a gathering place for geeky interests. Like, you can go and, like, talk about movies for a while. I guarantee if you went there, you could probably talk records with some of the guys who work there and mm-hmm. just hang out there for a bit and, you know, have a nice little, like, you know, hour-long visit at this shop. We don't have, in these times where we're all feeling so isolated, like, everything we do is through Zoom meetings or social distance, the idea of gathering together with people in a community sense over a shared love of something mm-hmm. certainly seems, you know, endearing, and I certainly would love to be able to go and hang out there for a little while.
Well, Matt, we're going to have to go out there. You realize that, right?
Someday, man.
we're going to do it. I promise you we're going to do it. You know, if they're still there, you know, I want to go so badly now, even though that it seems like a really long way to go for such a thing. But, I mean, it just looks too cool not to.
Well, and I think it's good to take sojourns to places like that to see, like, cool concert venues or places that don't really exist that much anymore, like old theater houses and like, you know, historical significance, like bars and places, you know, things that are kind of fleeting from the world. And as weird as it sounds to say, is the idea of the last Blockbuster, again, that's kind of an amazing little historical artifact. It's like walking through a time portal back to a simpler time. Mm-hmm. And so much of our podcast is about nostalgia.
Yeah.
And kind of, in a way, kind of being wistful for when times were simpler. When the most important thing was a warm pizza, your buddies, maybe a beer.
Well,
and the latest movie.
And the last thing I'll say, we noticed, too, me and my wife noticed that in the movie, it is right next to a Papa Murphy's, which...
Yeah.
That is the, like, perfect combination, because here where we live now, where, you know, where me and my wife live and we dated and settled down, there was a Hollywood Video that was right next to the Papa Murphy's. And that was one of the things that we loved to do. And that's why Hollywood Video, like, at the end when everything was closing in 2008, 2009, 2008, you know, still that was our last, like, store. that we went to because of the Papa Murphy's. And that's great because you get a take-home pizza, you got, like, your movie, and then, like, you just settle at home for the night, get in your cozy PJs and, you know, have a night of it or whatever. So I thought that was really cool that they have, like, in that little shopping center, those are Papa Murphy's. And
Well, it's just such a little, like, a little snapshot of the entire ideal. And, you know, I've really enjoyed kind of breaking from our regular format for this episode and just kind of really just, you know, wearing our nostalgia urges on our sleeves this episode. And because really, I mean, so much of our show is very much personified, again, by the vibe of this documentary and the ideas that it talks about. I'm glad that we took time to talk about it. Again, I really recommend it to any of our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
It should be on Netflix globally.
Yeah.
So no matter where you are, you know, shout out to our friend Steve in Australia.
Yep.
You know.
Well, and if you can't, like, you know, you can buy it from, you know, you can buy the DVD or buy the Blu-ray.
BenBlockbuster.com, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a fantastic watch. But yeah, it should be available worldwide. I mean, Blockbuster was in several different countries. So we consider our show to be in that video store era, which we'll have to have a discussion later, Matt, if this new store, if the Blockbuster still counts, you know, because really we consider about 2010 our sort of like cutoff point. But we'll have to have a private discussion later.
Well, that's why this was why it was a very special episode. This is why it was a very special episode. This is kind of like our like social awareness episode in a way.
Yeah.
You know, we're not going to talk about modern movies that often. Maybe never again.
Right.
But this was too much in our wheelhouse. This struck too close to home. It was too much about what we are about, and we had to show respect.
Oh yeah, very much. And shout out to, you know, everybody who has worked. Special shout out to Sandy if she's listening. We will mention you on Twitter when this podcast gets released. Thank you very much for everything and keeping that store alive. Much of us really, 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 really appreciate it. And thank you for also your participation in that documentary. That was really, really cool. We really enjoyed it. But until then, until our next episode where we talk about two other movies that have some sort of similarity between them, I'm Ryan Acri.
And I'm Matthew Estri. Go watch some movies, guys. And if you can, try to rent those movies from a video store.
Thanks for checking out this episode of Video Culture. You can check us out on Twitter at VideoCulture2.
That's the number 2 for two guys talking about movies like Ryan and myself.
And you can also check us out on Facebook. Just search for Video Culture Podcast.
Also, be sure to stop by our official website, video-culture.com. There we have the entire show archives, as well as articles about film.
Yeah, so check us out. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, coming out with us, talk movies. Did you like the show? Do you hate the show? Do you like or hate the movies we talked about? Let us know. Come chat with us and let's all watch movies together.
In a world where video stores have all but disappeared.
I mean, look at the James Bond section. Every James Bond movie. Every Avatar movie, because, you know, there's just the one so far.
I hate late fees, but I understand that you had to do it. Otherwise, people just keep those videos. I know I did. I know I did.
Meet Sandy, the Blockbuster mom.
So when I started in 2004, Blockbuster Video had roughly 9,000 stores and over 60,000 employees. And now...
Do I miss renting from a physical store? No, absolutely not. I don't think anybody does.
We just need Pacific Video to send us a notice that they are exercising their fourth and final renewal option. So yeah, that kind of scared me a little bit.
I mean, how long until companies don't even make DVDs, period? And then I don't know what.
Did you know that Blockbuster had a chance to buy Netflix, but they didn't?
Now that, to me, is crazy.
It is truly the last standing bastion of a bygone era.
Hey, that's cool, you know, that the last Blockbuster in existence is right here in my hometown.
If there's some cats in Oregon still scratching it out, you know, with Be Kind, Rewind, nothing wrong with that. That's beautiful.